Raised Rowdy. Everyone, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nikki T.
And we have our special guest today,
Mr. TJ Lau.
Hello. Hello.
Of Georgia Thunderbolt fame.
Yeah. Thanks for being here with us, man.
Thank you for having me. It's awesome.
And coming to Nashville and playing one of our events.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I've been meaning to get up here and do that with you guys for a while, and I appreciate you having me out. It's going to be awesome.
Man, me too. And also playing here a song with Kurt, which would be sick.
Which I don't know what song we're about to play.
I don't know either. It's gonna be right. We'll figure it out.
I bet it's going to be awesome, whichever one it was.
We'll do it live.
Yeah, have to. Yeah.
But I know you're from Rome, Georgia area originally.
Yeah, yeah. A little south, Taylorsville.
Taylorsville.
Yeah.
So how far is that? We're buddies with people from Rome, and we've been to the Peaches a few times.
Yeah.
Did you ever play at Peaches before?
I think like many moons ago.
It used
ago.
To be called the Brew House back in the day.
Yep. Yeah. It's a aggressive establishment that I think is closed now.
I think I played it with Michael Ray back in the day.
That makes sense.
I don't remember anything.
I think they revoked their liquor license or something.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, sounds something like that.
Yep.
Small R. town, R. you know.
Yeah. Someone else will buy it and they'll make it something.
Yeah.
That's usually how it works.
Rowdy's Bar and Grill, dude. One day.
In Rome.
There you go.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I mean, I do have this dream of a roadside honky-tonk somewhere where that we have a double wide out back and that's like the band house.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Like, that's the move.
Yeah, like, the song, Luke Combs' song, Cold As You, like, that, the whole imagery of that song is, like, a bar, like, I could see. It's like the Dusty Armadillo.
Yeah.
I want to own that bar.
Yeah, I want the Dusty Armadillo, but I want, like a solidly nice double wide in the back, you know?
Yeah, like Santa's Pub in the back.
Way nicer than Santa's.
Airstream would be nice.
Yeah.
There you go.
Have you ever been to Santa's Pub here in town?
No, have not. Have not.
Santa's Pub is a karaoke bar here in town. And it is cash only, and it is beers and like seltzers only.
Yeah.
So there's, and you can't curse on the mic.
Oh, really?
And you can't have a drink on the dance floor.
It's super old
school
Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I went there before I moved to town. This is probably 2011 or so, and I was thinking about moving to Nashville, and I had some friends that lived here, and they're like, "Let's go to Santa's tonight." And I was sharing a hotel room with my mom. And so you have like the two twin beds or whatever. And I came home the next morning and she's like, "How'd last night go?" I'm like, "Oh my God, it was so much fun." She goes, "You smell so bad." And because it used to be you can smoke in there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like super smoky,
super
like,
thick.
Yeah. And there's a pool table and like Nick said, cash only. And I don't think they allow smoking in there anymore.
Mm-mm.
But the pool table has a lamp over top of it and it says Miami Dolphins on it. So we love that bar.
You're right at home.
Yeah.
Chaos.
It's a great spot. Man. When's the last time you've been there? I actually went to sing. I was hammered. And this was a different time. And I got up on the mic. I'm like, "I'm about to sing the greatest fucking country song of all time." And then the DJ goes, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but no, you're not." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, he points, and I turn around, and I look at the sign, rule number one, no cussing on the mic.
Yep.
I was like, "Sorry.
Can I have a redo?"
Yeah.
Didn't get the redo.
Maybe one day I'll go back.
Oh, that's great.
It's probably been a year for me. I went there one time, and Burgess sang. It was hilarious.
That sounds unreal.
It was magic. And then Griffin Palmer. So, like, that's the other thing. You'll go in there, and then since it's Nashville, everybody thinks they can sing, some people actually can.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's an interesting spot for sure.
I'm like, I'm as good as TJ. I'm not.
No, you're not.
No one is.
Yeah. Dude, I was talking about you, and I said that in rock music, because you guys, I mean, it's Southern rock, but it's rock, right? You are probably my favorite voice that I've heard since Cornell.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. That's awesome. That's a huge compliment. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's incredible. Your range is amazing, and I can't wait to hear even more of it, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I've been actually writing a ton lately, and a lot of that stuff is leaning closer toward, like, Chris Cornell, Euphoria Morning area, and, like, I don't know. It's such a vein because I listen to records, and I get fixed on a record for a long time when I listen. Like, I get really fixated on a record, and I'm like, dang. How did he do that, you know? So I get and I start learning these chords and these chord progressions and stuff. And lately, that's the way my songwriting. It's like a cross between Beatles For Sale and Euphoria Morning. Like, it's got all those melodic chords and stuff like that. But you just can't beat Chris Cornell. I mean, any of that stuff, dude. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite vocalist.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
The range. I remember seeing him at a House of Blues in Vegas after he left Audioslave.
Yeah.
And the last song of the encore was Jesus Christ Pose.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, how did he have that much voice left?
Oh, no.
At the end of a set with all those songs like he sings them.
Why did he leave Audioslave?
I don't know. Probably political stuff.
I think I read somewhere he was going through, because that was around the time he was like super bad alcoholic. And he just went through a divorce or something and all that stuff. And when did the first one come out? 2001? 2001 or something like that. And then the other one was what? 2000?
That was like the season of the supergroups. It was like Velvet Revolver and all the drug people were getting pulled out of bands and replaced with someone who wasn't, and just everyone swapping or
Alter Bridge.
True.
Yeah. Well, and the grunge scene, I mean, kind of started that way with like Temple of the Dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which was a super group kind of before Soundgarden got big and before Pearl Jam got big.
Yeah.
That scene was kind of working, but it was before it really had that national attention. So I feel like that was like a part of the thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It bloomed a lot of bands, man, that people hold in such, you know, high regard, like Seether.
Yeah.
You know, and Nickelback and stuff like that.
Seether wasn't a super group, was it? No.
Oh, no, like, just like from grunge, you know, it came from grunge. All these bands were spawned out of that, and they just, and you can hear the influence in there. Like, Sean from Seether, he's a huge Kurt Cobain guy.
Yeah.
But it's his own thing. He's made it his own thing, and he's, you know, they're a great group, too. But it's just bands like that that come out of playing that heavy rock music. They listen to that grunge, and then what they turned it into was stuff like Nickelback and stuff like that. And it just, it's huge, you know, and it's so creative.
Well, and that's the crazy part, too. Like, if you listen to early grunge rock, you hear a lot of the hair metal in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And then it's how did it change from hair metal as it went to turn into what was considered grunge music. Yeah. And then from there, it went from grunge to, what do they call that, post-grunge?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the stuff that came right after grunge.
Like the pre-new metal?
Yeah. So crazy. Well,
You know what's funny? I was hanging out, this was a while ago, hanging out with some friends, and one of their parents, we're talking about the music that they grew up on, and they're like, yeah, we just love hair metal. And it was like, I was like, really? And it was like the way like my parents love like the Beatles or Led Zeppelin, they're like, we just love Rat and Poison. And I was like, I never would have thought there's a group of kids that grew up and was like teasing their hair and everything. Oh, yeah. It's just funny to think like, because I was, like, always listening to the bands that were, like, anti-hair metal at the time, you know?
I was never a big 80s guy. I mean, never really a big 80s guy. I think I kind of skipped that. I went from, you know, 40s to 50s, 60s, 70s, and 90s.
Yeah.
2000. Well, some of my favorite records are in the 80s, for sure. You know, and I love that the 80s pop stuff is great, too, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, Ride the Lightning, boom. That's, like, one of my favorite records of all time.
Yeah.
For sure.
That was the start of the change of the genre, though. Everything that kind of evolved after that evolved from there.
Have you all ever listened to Pantera's first record?
Yeah, it's straight
like
hair metal.
Hair metal, dude. Yeah. It's wild. I was like, and then Phil's like, ha!
Yeah. What was Dimebag's name before it was Dimebag?
Probably just Daryl.
It was he had a name like David Lee Roth, though. It was like, like, you know how they have Diamond Dave? His was something like that.
Like that.
But he had like a huge hair metal name or something like that.
I thought that was crazy.
I think my drummer was telling me that, Bristol, because he's a huge Pantera guy.
Oh,
Him and Riley both. They're huge Pantera, Metallica, Megadeth, and all that stuff.
Dude, I had a dream last night. This is weird to say on the podcast, but I'm going to tell it anyway. You just jogged my memory. So I was telling you earlier today, I've been kind of stressed out. I've been doing too much shit. It's just true. And so I just haven't have enough time to put all my energy into everything. Have you guys ever been that way?
Oh, every day.
Yeah. Especially being an artist, it's probably even more so. And I had this dream last night where I was hanging out with Dave Mustaine, and he was like, have you learned all the songs yet? And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you got to learn all of our songs to come play with Megadeth. And I was like, I can't even play some of these songs. You know what I mean? And the dream was us hanging out and talking about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and then me being like, this is cool, but like, I gotta go practice in my dream. I knew it because I do have to go practice in my dream. I'm like stressing out about practicing, and Dave Mustaine is like hanging out with him.
I couldn't imagine getting a call like that. Like, I think about that. We were talking about Audioslave a minute ago. Could you imagine having to sing that first album every night?
Oh.
Could you imagine? Like, back to back?
Tearing your vocals up.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And, like, it comes back to practice, but it also, that's like genetic freak stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And when you're a singer, it's like you have to change your entire lifestyle. To, like, John Bon Jovi, it's like, when it mods from E minor to G minor and Living on a Prayer, like, that's some big boy singing. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's hard to sing, man. It's like, and you have to do that for 50 years. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Man, if we had just started in D minor and went to F minor, it would have just still would have been a smash, but I would be able to sing it now.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm sure they're playing it. They got to be dropping that. But
yeah,
it's
Like, well, it's like that Bob Seger stuff. You know, the last tour he did, I think he went from standard to. Now he's in whole step, the last tour he was playing, because some of that shit's outrageous. I mean, like, you know, Hollywood Nights, that's high, you know.
Hollywood Nights.
Yeah.
Luke's got that song, Oklahoma, Ain't No Love in Oklahoma, and the verse is high as giraffe pussy, bro. It's crazy. And I remember the first time we played, I'm like, we were just in this rehearsal room. I'm like, can he actually sing that? And then he just sang it perfectly. I was like, oh, my God, this guy's good. But I'm like, when we're 80, we're like rocking out. I'm like,
You're going to be listening.
Dropping it down, probably.
You're going to have to play that one slow down to acoustic. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is crazy. And nowadays, I mean, there aren't as many extremely great vocalists. You are one of them.
Oh, thank you.
You're an amazing vocalist. But there's a lot of people that's not the thing that makes them pop now. You know, there's people that, you know, their personality is what's kind of kicking it off for them. Yeah. Or, you know, a song works and it just kind of kicks that down the road, but man, it is amazing when you get to catch a vocalist that can really just shut everyone up in the room and turn heads.
Yeah, I tell you who I'm a fan of is Jay from Rival Sons.
Yeah,
he's been doing it for a while now, and he's still got
really
it.
Good.
I mean, he's a fantastic vocalist.
Yeah,
and there are so many out there too that a lot of people never hear, like bands that I've seen in clubs. You know, while we're on the road, that while we're loading out, they're starting to play and they're kicking off and they're in the rafters and they're just holding it the whole night.
Crazy.
And like, even some of these cover bands, you know, that I've seen play, like at the Machine Shop, they'll play 4 hours straight and they'll be singing stuff like, you know, Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, and you know, but just 4 hours straight, you know.
Yeah.
My heart is in Ohio, you know. Just 4 hours straight, just wearing it out. And I'm like, God, that takes some balls, dude.
It's crazy.
Yeah, big time.
And a lot of artists will, I don't know, like Stapleton, another one of the best singers in the entire universe, travels, I don't know, all the time, but with a vocal coach.
Yeah.
And like Celine Dion, like one of the best singers ever, was like a student of the voice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think to be that crazy, technically powerful, it's like you have to like know your shit, like how to breathe. And
you have to live it. I mean, you basically have to live it.
Yeah.
Like Michael Bolton. Everybody shits on Michael Bolton, but dude was a monster. He was in a band back in the 70s called Blackjack, and he used to play at the same clubs that Richard, my manager from the Headhunters, they used to play the same clubs around Atlanta and stuff like that. Could you imagine the Headhunters and Michael Bolton?
Yes. Yeah.
Same night.
You know, yeah, I would love it.
You know, think about that. Yeah. But like, come like, late 80s, mid 80s, he was having vocal trouble, and he started doing opera vocal lessons, and he's done that ever since.
Crazy.
And he has his opera vocal coach on the road with him. Went in, he's like 70 and he can still rip. He can sing Me Under the Table. I mean, he's a monster, dude.
Wow.
He is a monster. Honestly.
Yeah, and it's nice to have money because you can bring that teacher with you all the time.
Yeah.
Bro, if I was rich, I've already thought about it. For sure, my fiddle teacher's coming with me everywhere because I need that in my life. I need all the help I can get. Then I would just pay like Magnus Carlsen to teach me chess. And then you could just have like Gordon Ramsay to like teach you how to cook, and or just like whatever it is you want
to learn how to cook.
Pay him to cook and insult you. Yeah. Just.
There's some shit I'd like to learn, you know, just like just to have a lot of time and a lot of money just to learn. That's, if I was like Elon Musk, I wouldn't be fussing with like politics and stuff. I would just be like learning all this stuff. Like I don't have time to practice.
You expand your knowledge with your wealth. Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go take some kite surfing lessons or something
in
Maui. I don't know. Just like whatever.
Yeah.
Sounds like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like even more than you'd put on your plate now, though.
Yeah. I know, but I'd be really rich. I can just throw money at problems, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get any more time, though. You
know? That's true.
That's the thing. Like, if you look at Elon, like a guy like that, he's just running nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he has so many balls in the air at all times that I have no idea how he keeps it all there. Yeah.
Not how you would, you know, get in a position where you can manage that kind of money and have a family and spend time with your family and sleep, you know? Like, how does that even work? At all.
Yeah.
Money.
Let him worry. Yeah. Let him worry about it.
Yeah.
It's not our problem.
Yeah. Luckily, we don't have to do that. Yeah. But how many, man, let's talk a little bit, I guess, about your music.
Oh, yeah. So,
how many shows have you guys been playing?
It's been kind of slow this year because we've been in the process of getting the new album out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but we're kicking off 25th. We're on the road, and I was telling him earlier, we're not going to be back until August 17th, and then we've got 3 days home, and then we're back in Europe. So,
July 25th to August 16th?
Yeah.
Damn, that's a long time.
Yeah, and we're finally getting to the point now where we got with a new agency, so they're booking us like wildfire, dude.
That's great.
And they're all, for a change, it's all headlining shows. So, and you know, playing headline shows, that's the only way to get your chops up.
Right. Yeah.
That's the only way you can really get in the groove and get really tight. Mm-hmm. You know, the 45-minute sets are fantastic when you just want to blow off some steam and get out there and have a good time. But, no, we're really happy and we're really excited because we've got like, we're getting offers every day to go out and play. Like, this is going to be the first time we're heading out to Wyoming. Like, we made it to Europe, 18 countries in Europe before we made it to Wyoming, you know?
So wild.
It's just, but, like, it's nonstop for the rest of the year. All the way to, like, December 17th, we're booked.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So, yeah, there's no really, like, vacation days in store. It's just work, work, work. And, you know, that's all right. Get to play.
Give us an intro into your band. What are the Georgia Thunderbolts like for people that haven't checked them out yet?
Pretty easygoing guys. You know, a live band for sure. You know, we're still trying to find our sound in the studio, and I think we've gotten closer with this second album that's going to be released. And you were there for part of that to see that and how that come to be and stuff like that. But we're just a live band, and we like to meet our fans, you know, and we like to interact with the audience. The only crazy person in our band's Riley. He's got the most energy I've ever seen of anybody.
He's a monster on stage.
Yeah, and his hair. I mean, his hair is so long. He looks like Cousin It. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's it. Yeah.
With the Les Paul.
Yeah. Got to throw a couple pinch harmonics in there.
Yeah.
No, but it's really cool, man. We're all like-minded dudes, and we all like to play music and meet different fans and meet different people from different walks of life and understand where they come from, and that plays a big deal in the writing process too. You know, the people you meet and the people you come across, and like, you know, they're taking time out of their life to come see us, so why not try to give them the best that we possibly can every night, even if I have laryngitis or somebody has the flu, you know, let it go. Just play,
push through.
Throw up in a bucket, and keep trucking.
Yeah.
How would you describe the sound? I mean, I would say southern rock for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's southern rock. It's a little bit of blues and, you know, a little bit of classic rock. And some of the new album's more country.
Yeah, but some of it's heavy too.
Yeah,
you
some
guys
of it's
got
heavy.
Some riffs on there. Some drop D, Les Paul, Mesa Boogie kind of stuff going
on. Yeah. We actually had a song that didn't make the record. It was in whole step, and it was a rocker. Maybe it'll be on the next one or maybe release as a single. But that's the thing. We can go and play with bands like Smoke and Whiskey Myers and, you know, even bands like Dave Mason and stuff like that. But we can also turn around and go play with bands like Deep Purple and Blackstone Cherry and just completely jump, you know. And that's what's really neat. We've always liked the heavier music because the guys mainly, you know, playing the guitar, they love heavy music. You know, Logan, he loves Boston and AC/DC. He just loves
he's a classic rock guy.
Yeah, he loves the ride, dude. And then Riley loves Megadeth, huge Megadeth fan. And he likes Metallica and Pantera and Bristol and Zach are the same way. And I think the whole melodic thing comes in is when I write the lyrics and the melody and stuff is that I listen to a lot of soul music. And that kind of just clashes with that. And it's kind of a unique sound. I mean, it's kind of a cool sound, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a soup.
Yeah, exactly. And it comes out, you know, we played covers to start with, and we played covers back in the day, which everybody does. You know, you want to get people's attention, and then eventually we'd start throwing songs of ours in there, and we kind of look at the crowd, you know. We throw them in between, like, four or five covers, and then go back four or five covers and just kind of look at the crowd. They didn't bat an eye. They were just getting shit-faced, but, you know, we just keep trucking, and then finally we met Richard, and you know, he turned all that around for us. But yeah, we're southern rock, blues, and soul and stuff like that. And sometimes it gets heavy. I mean, we do Tranquil in the set, so it's pretty heavy.
Yeah,
super heavy.
Yeah.
So, how did you guys all meet as a band?
Logan and I went to school together. We've known each other for a long time, and Zach was Logan's neighbor. They live in the same neighborhood, and Riley and Bristol, they're from Rome, and they went to the same school together. And they had a band in Rome back in the day, and there was a place in Cartersville, not too far from Rome. Mm-hmm. It's called Six's Tavern. It used to be owned by this different set of people, and they used to have live music open mic night, but it wasn't like just the acoustic. It was, they had full drum kit, they had amps there for you, they had guitars if you didn't have guitars, and you could just get up there and jam, you know. And we all sucked. We'd get up there and just make noise. I mean, we would get up there and just rock out. We would do that. And then met Bristol and Riley there, and they had a band, like I said, from Rome, and me and Zach and Logan from Taylorsville, and we got together and we were jamming, you know, and they were playing. Their singer didn't show up one night, and I got up on stage with them, and Zach was playing bass with them. He had played with them because he was always hanging out up there. You know, me and Zach are both dropouts, so he was always hanging out at the open mic night, and we'd go up there and play, and he was playing with them. He played a few shows and stuff with them, and then I got up there, started singing, and we thought it was awesome, and it was some time before I heard from them again, and they were looking for a singer for a band, and I went and practiced with him, and then me and Zach were talking, like, well, Logan plays guitar, let's bring him to practice, you know, he's doing the Southern Rock thing, you need three guitars, so, or two guitars, you know, we brought Logan in, and that's it, you know, we've been together ever since late 15, 16,
yeah,
and just crazy. Trying to hash everything, we've kind of been growing up together on the road, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of things we're missing out, we never really did the party and stuff, or the, all that stuff, we were just always gone, trying to play, and, you know, grind it out, and try to be on airplanes before we were 25, and now we're 27. We're a little behind on that.
That's a interesting thing, though. I mean, like you said, you kind of become brothers with those guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Being out on the road, for sure.
Definitely. You know, you get to know a lot about each other, and you get to, you know, tend to realize what they feel without them saying, and then you can fix problems with each other before they ever get out of hand.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get a bunch of testosterone-filled dudes in a van for 2,000 miles at a time, not to butt heads. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen very often because we're all just so laid back and we know what it's like now. We've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
Just together, you know, and it's just like, well, if it's going to happen, it happens. I'm going to sleep. Don't wreck, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How old were you when you figured out that you had a voice? Like when you really knew you, like, wanted to do it?
2015. 2015, yeah. That's when I really started singing, was 15.
How old
are you? Oh, my God. 17, 18, maybe. Mm-hmm. I was young, 17, 18. Maybe. I don't know. I can't.
So you'll math. Be a band for 10 years in 2025.
Yeah.
Damn.
Crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah.
A decade with those boys.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. It's like, it really, it's a piece of your life, you know, and you really come to appreciate a lot of things that you wouldn't have had we not came up together. And, you know, I was talking about this other day with somebody. It's like when somebody's thrust into the spotlight, sure, they're going to love their fans and they're going to, you know, really appreciate where they come from and everything like that. But if you've been on the road since you were a kid and you get just a little taste of what it could be like, that makes you want to do it so much more, and you're so much more appreciative, mm-hmm. than when it's all just thrown in your lap. You're like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do now? You know, it just... That's the way I look at it, and that's the way I think the rest of the guys look at it, too, is because we're just really grateful to be able to do what we do, you know? And, you know, coming through COVID and everything, we're survived. We're still here. We're about to put out another record.
Yeah.
So come on, bring it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that record. You said it's kind of like exploring genres,
yeah.
a little bit. What's the title of the record?
Rise Above It All.
Rise Above It All.
Yeah.
And who'd you guys cut it with and where?
We cut it in Glasgow, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Our producer, Richard Young from the Kentucky Headhunters,
mm-hmm.
and the co-producer, David Barrick, Barrick Recording Studio, mm-hmm. you know, and it's right behind the plaza. Like, if you go to Glasgow, there's not much there. There's a little downtown and a few restaurants and stuff, and then right behind the big plaza theater, there's a little brick building, and that's where the studio is, and that's where we've cut the past two records. And it's been really cool to have, you know, influence of Richard and, you know, the guys from Blackstone Cherry, and, you know, just a lot of stuff has come into play as we've been recording, you know, over these past couple of years, and we've learned a ton because we've never professionally done it, you know, before those past two records. It's mm-hmm. always just been like, I'd like to record, but now we're doing it for real. And, you know, it's really neat there. It's laid back. And there's a sushi bar right up the hill, and, you know, drink sake and have a good time.
Hell yeah.
That's where I cut with y'all, right?
Yeah, that's it. Guitar. Yeah, sure is. It's like a little quaint little brick building.
It's awesome in there, yeah.
It's actually an old Coca-Cola factory from back in the day. Yeah, it sure is.
That's cool.
I learned that not too long ago.
Yeah, it's always interesting, too, like, because Nashville has a certain way of doing things, but when you're pretty much everywhere else, it's not the same way.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's just interesting to see how all of that works.
It is, and, like, I'm not really familiar with the way Nashville does it, but, you know, everything tends to sound great that comes out of Nashville. Like, we've always wanted to record at Blackbird or something like that, or get out there and do that, but we're just taking our time.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to write the best material possible and trying to make sure we got all our ducks in a row before we shoot for anything like that. Just trying to make the best music we possibly can that makes us happy and, you know, spreads positivity. That's it, really.
Yeah, and that you don't mind playing on the road every time.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. And some of that stuff, it's a little tough sometimes. And I'm like, oh, why did I do that?
When does the record come out?
August 23rd. Yeah. August 23rd. Not too much longer. We've been waiting on it for a while now.
Are you guys dropping anything earlier or dropping the whole record at once? Or
we have one more single coming out right before, and it's the one you played on.
Cool.
It's called Wait. Yeah. So I guess we'll have to wait on Wait.
Yeah, there you go.
But not wait as long as the whole record.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a week before, I believe. So
that's cool.
Really excited about that.
Have you guys been on radio at all? Like,
that's been a struggle.
Southern rock's tough.
Yeah.
Because there's stations that play it, but they're usually playing the guys like Blackstone Cherry and stuff that's been around for a while.
Yeah, no, it's been a struggle. You know, there's certain spots that I could have heard us on Outlaw.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes, or, you know, even stuff off the new record could have been on like Turbo or Octane or stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't know why that hasn't happened. I hope it does soon. That would be really nice, you know, because you're kind of like, word of mouth will always be great, but it doesn't get you as far as a radio.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, that radio says it all.
Well, even like XM, just because people can Shazam it and like find out what it is, or they can see it on the screen, the name of your band or the name of the song, you know, it does definitely help when you're doing exploratory. Other than that, it's just like relying on a Spotify or Apple to kind of feed the right stuff based on what else people listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been added to a bunch of playlists too, which we're very thankful for. And that's really neat because that's boosted our numbers a ton. You know, but we're a live band, and, you know, we kind of get excited when stuff like radio gets mentioned. We're like, ooh, Christmas.
Yeah. It's hard to just be a live band nowadays.
It is.
Unfortunately. And we have this conversation just about every single time, but it's like, you just got to hammer that social media, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Find your own way of doing it.
And we're all ass at it. I mean, we're not good at it at all.
I've noticed, yeah.
Yeah. I told him not long ago, I said I didn't have internet to my house like 3 weeks ago. I haven't had internet for like 27 years at my house.
Crazy.
And I just finally got it. And now I'm like a kid in a candy store. I'm like, Peacock, Netflix, let's go. You know?
That's probably why you're so good at music. You've just been practicing.
Yeah, I have.
Everyone else is just like,
yeah, and I'm buffering over here to find Ray Charles play piano. Oh, yeah. Like, come on, man.
what age did you start playing piano?
Oh, man, right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started back late 2019. That's when I got my Nord. I told myself that I had this old upright piano at the church, and I was like, well, if I can teach myself to play this, I'm going to buy me a nice piano. And I sat down and I got addicted to it. Like, first thing, I was like, oh, man, this is really neat. Like, you can sit down and make a full band sound without having a full band. You know, you're over here playing harmonies with your right hand, reharmonizing with your left and playing, you know. I mean, it's just, like, crazy. And the melodies that you can make, I got addicted to it. I mean, it was like a drug to me, really. And then I discovered, you know, I always listened to people like Ray Charles and stuff like that. But when I really dove into what he was doing on the piano.
Yeah.
Like, he was playing stuff that, you know, he, like I said, he played the melody with his right, but he would also bass and chord with his left. And it was just, it opened my mind to a lot of things. And then I got into Thelonious Monk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just twisted my mind all around. I'm like, how in the hell, you know, playing bebop, you know, come on, man. It's just.
Dude, Monk is crazy.
He is. He's one of the most, you know, sought after styles of playing, for me anyway, because nobody does that anymore. They can do it. Yeah, they can do it. But him to originally sit down and do that stuff like Solo Monk and, you know, Orpheus of all that.
Oh, it's gold.
Dude, it's amazing.
His style's crazy unique.
And I loved it when, every time I ever watched him do like the Montreux or the Swiss Jazz Fest, he'd stand up and he'd start dancing, start tapping the piano. Mm. And John Coltrane back there just playing. I'm like, oh man, this is insane.
He's
dude.
Super hip, dude.
Yeah.
And his style with the cig and the
yeah
everything.
I loved his hat. I wish I had one of those hats. I don't, it's like a little Russian hat.
Yeah.
I wish I had that thing, dude. That's awesome. I'd probably get laughed at.
Yeah, for sure.
And his style of playing too with his hands. He didn't keep a flat hand. He played like that. Like his hands were so stiff and straight, but every note was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like to have that kind of accuracy and to be able to close your eyes and feel it at the same time.
I did not have jazz piano talk on my bingo card today, but I'm glad for going there.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too. It's really opened my eyes, you know, melodically, especially like listening, you know, listen to the Beatles too. You listen to George Martin, all that big band swing mm-hmm. stuff he listened to. You know, it's the same thing, the way he was orchestrating all that stuff from like Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby. Mm-hmm. If you really try to play that on a piano, that's jazz.
100%.
Like, yeah. You can't fake that.
You know, especially yesterday.
Yeah, you have to know that stuff, dude. And it just opens your mind. I have a big palette of music. I mean, it goes anywhere from Bing Crosby to Whitney Houston. I mean, it's just so diverse. And I love it all. There's nothing of it that I really hate, you know, because you can learn something from every one of those people.
Yeah.
And I love it so much.
That's great.
That's why you got all that soul in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Who are your favorite vocalists of all time?
Ooh.
I know we talked to Cornell. So.
Yeah. Chris Cornell, for sure. Wilson Pickett. He had one of the best natural distorted voices of all time. And there's a lot of similarities with him and Cornell, too, when they start doing those screams. Yeah. Wilson Pickett, he sounds like a banshee, you know. And and Chris Cornell, when he starts doing, like, Shadow on the Sun, in the Shadow on the Sun, he sounds like a banshee.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not just like a guttural scream. It's an actual in-tune scream. He's not yeah. just like – also a great vocalist, Chester Bennington.
Yeah.
He's, you know, fantastic. But my favorites are – there's a guy not many people have heard of. His name's Frankie Miller. He's from Glasgow, Scotland, and he's one of the best. He's one of the best soul blues singers of that time that never really got much credit. He wrote songs for Ray Charles and the Bellamy Brothers and stuff like that back in the day. But and he, some of his favorite writers were people like Randy Newman and stuff like that. He was just a real class act, and his voice, man, it's just out of this world. But Bob Seger, Frankie Miller, Paul Rodgers, Chris Cornell, Robert Plant, you know, Ray Charles. Wilson Pickett. I can go on for days. I can't stop. I keep hearing voices and I'm like, oh well, there he is, you know, he's in that, you know. There's a lot of them. It's a lot of soul influence, you know, a lot of soul influence, you know. Otis Redding, obviously, he's fantastic. I love all that stuff, man.
So I can tell, like, just from talking to you that you love music.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What age would you say, like, you kind of came into that where you were just like, because I'm someone that has been engulfed in music since I was a kid.
Yeah.
But not on the, like, playing side kind of like you were. Like, what age do you think that kind of clicked in your brain?
I've always loved music. And my parents, you know, used to play all kind of soul music. So I can remember, you know, all the way back when I was a little kid, you know, just listening and loving what I was hearing, like, for the longest time. I did an interview the other day and I was talking to somebody about me and my grandfather. This was 2002, 2003 or something like that. And we were riding around and he had this badass album in his car. And I never could place what it was until I got older and I seen it at a Second Charles in Michigan. I was walking around Second Charles and I was looking. I was like, that's a damn record. It was Live Bullet. Bob Seger. It's the one where his face is like all contorted and stuff and his hair is like all in his face. But my grandfather used to drive me around in a little purple PT Cruiser around the house. Yeah. Yeah. Hatchback, sunroof, you know, deluxe. Yeah. Yeah. But he would have that.
PT Bruiser.
Yeah. Yeah. He had that Bob Seger record, Live Bullet, in there. And the first song come on was Nutbush. And I was like, damn, this is bad. This mm-hmm. is bad. I love this. Mm-hmm. And Bob Seger's voice, it just stuck out like a sore thumb. I was like, God, dude. This guy, I guarantee you, smells like whiskey and cigarettes.
Yeah.
he sounds like he does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just incredible. From an early age, you know, my parents always listened to soul music and gospel music. And, you know, that's the earliest memory I have of music was with my grandfather, like 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. And it was that album that really done it for me. And I've loved it. I mean, it's always been somewhere in the back of my mind. There wasn't a time where I didn't listen to music. Now there are times where I have to turn it off, like my brain off. I have to be like, oh, my God, I have to sleep for at least a day. You know,
yeah.
I got to turn it off.
Yeah.
But whenever we have people come in here and talk about the music that influenced them, it's like they always listen to such cool music. And like 2001, I was like listening to like Nonpoint or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to Limp Bizkit for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Also in 2001, though, we were a little older.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was in high school, probably.
Yeah, it was my first year of college. So.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I'm old. Yeah. But I was exploring different things. When I was a kid, it was all the stuff that you'd probably think was cooler, you know?
Yeah, I was listening to my parents' records, like Zeppelin 4.
And like picking the best ones. Like, yeah. This one's cool.
This one's awesome,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, a big thing, too, that's, you know, not as popular as it used to be is album artwork.
Yeah.
I always loved the damn album artwork.
Same.
I always loved that. And I don't see that as much anymore. It's just normally like a picture or something,
or
but
liner notes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just, man, I love that so much. Like, whatever happened to thing, like shit, like Sgt. Pepper's, you know, it's incredible. Even if the songs suck, which they don't, you'd be like, oh, I'm gonna hang that up, decoration.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of intrigues you. You know,
I completely agree with that. It's just more of the art. And now it's weird because previously you had a music video and that was what you got to see of the people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now it's, you get little bits of social media content or little bits of show recaps, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not as easy to direct it.
Yeah.
There's so many more opportunities to direct how you want stuff to look.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like, maybe it's okay, how are we going to video capture this? Is it going to be dimly lit as opposed to like, you know, that, or it's like maybe you have cool art on the background of a video that maybe someone's paying attention to while they're paying attention to you and they're looking up for.
Definitely.
So there's still opportunities for that. It's just definitely changed drastically.
Yeah. I was watching a documentary the other day. It was a John Lennon documentary. It was Above Us Only Sky. And it was cool because they have one of those Polaroids where you snap it.
Yeah.
And the film cameras, and they snapped it. And then snapped it again, and it made like a double pane shot. That's how they made the Imagine album cover. It was an accident. They snapped it and then had it turned upside down looking, and then they snapped it again. And that's what they used for the album cover. And I thought,
crazy.
Damn, dude, art, you know?
Yeah.
And there's this Black Sabbath album where it's like all the colors are weird and stuff, and they took the film and just like dunked it in shit.
Yeah.
And made it look cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Or Led Zeppelin did that too.
Yeah, it's kind of like what did them guys used to do back in the day in like the CIA? They used to put them pictures
in like
the
dark room.
Yeah.
So instead of like, there's film photographers would do all kinds of stuff because there's no Photoshop. Mm. So it's like if you want your film to look grainier and contrastier, they would like instead of process it in like the C41 chemicals. They would cross process it in the E6 chemicals, and that would give it a different look. And so there's like, and then all that stuff was used on album covers and stuff.
That's like, knowing that, like the knowledge of knowing that stuff and physically doing that instead of running it through something today, that's art. You know, that's going back and like,
it's really cool.
Doing your homework. You're like, and now you have it at your fingertips, and it's still impossible. You put a computer in front of me, you know, be scared to death. I know where the exit button is, you know.
Yeah, I hear that.
It's all. Yep.
I feel that way sometimes, even though I'm not as unplugged as you are.
Sometimes
I open up Logic. I'm like trying to cut like a overdub or something. I'm like.
And then you see guys like Jacob Collier drawing pictures with their notes.
Yeah.
It makes no sense, dude.
I feel like that as I get older, like technology, I try to embrace it as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know, because that's.
You're good about it.
Yeah. But there are things where I'm like, oh, crap, this is not what I want to be doing. You know? Yeah. It happens all the time.
Anxiety
overload.
One thing
that's cool about art is the parameters that it's in, the box that it's put in. I think the restrictions and what people can do within those restrictions is what makes something impressive or, you know, astounding or interesting.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's cool that the way that all they had was film and they didn't have Photoshop. How were they able to do that?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's like nowadays, it's like there's less and less limitations. You know, it's like with AI and everything, it's now I see stuff, I'm like not as impressed with things.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's cool to sit down and watch someone on a guitar play something badass and you're like, hell yeah. You know, it's like, they're just, but it's like, if you listen to a record, it's like, you know, it could be like every note is put in there. And, you know, it's like, you don't really know.
Yeah.
So seeing live music, like when we saw y'all play, it's like, damn, these guys are just fucking rocking.
Yeah. Yeah, that show that we saw at the Harley dealership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that?
The Shed.
The Shed.
Yeah.
God, first of all, that place rules.
Yeah, so it's amazing.
It's badass. Awesome. Yeah, no doubt.
That place was great. It was packed the freak out.
Yeah.
And you guys slayed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Your guys' live show is so freaking good, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's funny because I can't take my eyes off of you or Riley.
Yeah.
So I'm just like back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. So it's kind of like in terms of that, like the draw in, you guys basically have two lead singers in terms of like the draw.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
A lot of bands who have like the one guy, some of the greats, like, you know, you have like a drummer, or you'll have a guitar player that or another like feature. You guys definitely have.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Which is amazing.
I was doing a cool trick actually when we were doing that video, and I think you called it. Picked
that
up on it.
Was a video shoot, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think you picked up on it. But
that's right, I forgot about that.
We were running the track, we were singing, and the microphone was still on, and I was singing harmony through the whole entire song while we were going. So if you watch like the actual fan video we released, I'm actually singing the harmony to the song through the song that doesn't have harmony. And I was like, damn, why didn't I do this? This is badass.
So cool.
Yeah, it's always the thing, like, when you get done recording something and it's been out for a while, that's when you realize, holy crap, it could have been so much cooler.
Mm-hmm. You always write your best shit after the record comes
exactly,
out.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, God, rewind.
Yeah, I was in the music video too.
Yeah, oh yeah, both of you guys.
Not to brag or anything, but no, the other one, the other one too.
Yeah, yeah, Wait.
Yeah, the Wait sure music was. Video.
That'll be coming out. That's the one that's coming out right before. And it's actually sick. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Oh, dude. I got to send you that. Yeah, I got to send you the link. Yeah, it looks really cool. We look very, we don't look like hillbillies, so. No, it's really neat.
Cinema magic.
Yeah. That room actually turned out really well. I don't remember, was it cold that day? It wasn't cold. Colder, maybe. Yeah. It was colder. There's no phone service whatsoever.
Yeah, I remember that.
But it was a cool spot in the middle of nowhere.
Well, let's talk about the song, since that's going to be the next single that's released.
Yeah, it's actually really neat. I went through a big spell listening to the Beatles, which that's basically, you know, I listen to them every day or every other day when I get the chance. But I've always been a bit leery of taking song titles that were huge and using them as one of your songs. Mm-hmm. Not like a Stairway to Heaven or something like that, you know.
Like Home is a song, that title's been used a million times.
Yeah, and Wait. You know, like, Wait, because I was listening to the Beatles, and I was like, damn, I love that. Wait till I come back to you. And I was like, oh, man, that's really neat. So me and Logan got together, and we started playing out at the house, and I started singing that Beatles song. And I was like, I changed it up, and he started playing a different key, and I started singing that in a different key, and I was like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. You know, this is going to work. And I started doing it and played it, and we sat down and wrote the whole song right there on the spot.
The two of y'all.
Yeah. Sat down and wrote that whole entire song on the spot, and we'd wrote one before that, and it just sucked. I mean, it was just like terrible, and we were like, oh, go get something to eat, you know, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And we sat down and wrote that one, and we recorded it and sent it to our manager, and he called back, and he was like, all right, so this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna use this, you know, we're gonna work on it using the studio. But it was one of those songs that come out of nowhere. You know, you kind of write the chorus. And I rarely do that. That's my weakest point of writing a song is writing. I can write a verse, no problem. I can write an in-depth, you know, picturesque verse. But when it comes to the chorus, I'm like, oh, well, it's never going to stand up to that, you know.
Yeah. It's hard to be catchy and succinct. And
yeah, it is. You know. It is, really. But it's like, especially doing the music we do, because it changes. Yeah. You're never on like a set sound. And every song changes so much. And you're like, well, could I do this here? Could I throw a bluesy, soulful run here? Or do I have to keep it straight, you know? But this song's really neat. It's more, a lot of the softer stuff on this record is definitely more acoustic based. Mm-hmm. And the harder stuff is definitely harder. Like there's like the stuff that's
like, higher contrast on the
record. Yeah, yeah. And the only thing that's like holding them together is a ballad in the middle. There's a ballad on the record called Rock and Roll Record. And it's kind of like a testament song, I guess, you know, just kind of giving you 2 cents on something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's coming across in that way. But Wait's laid back, you know, it's harmonies, acoustic guitar, high strung guitar. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's the first time using that in the studio, and I thought I was badass. I was like, yeah.
Lots of guitar harmonies. Kind of like Skinner-y, I would say, or something. You know? It's definitely, for me, it's like a classic rock vibe with some pedal steel guitar on.
It's the first song we've ever had pedal steel on, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. My pleasure.
Thanks for adding your magic mojo.
I played through some old amp. It just like sounded all sparkly. It was like an old deluxe or something.
It sounded so good.
I'm excited for that to come out.
So you guys are over in Europe, and you said you've been over there at 18 countries.
18 countries, yeah.
That's insane.
We did that in a month with Blackstone.
So crazy.
And
are you guys headlining your own shows over there?
We are. We are. That's really exciting. We're really excited about that.
I've talked to a lot of folks, and they said that Europe is very much more embracing of rock as a genre than we are here. So it's cool to see that.
And it's crazy to see that too. When you go there in person, you hear it and you go over there and they're singing your songs back to you. And nobody over here knows them, you know, and you're like, oh my God, what is this, Twilight Zone? But it was great. We got up there and we started playing, and, you know, Blackstone was great to us. They helped us out when we needed it, and we partied with them every night. We hung out with them every night, and we literally, like, slept and, like, within feet of each other. So our bus was always following theirs, and we were right there with them, woke up, went to eat with them. And so we built a really good bond and friendship with them through that. You know, and playing those grueling shows, you know, you get tired, everybody gets tired, and then you should get the talks about, you know, wanting to go home, missing family and stuff like that. And, you know, but it was nice because the last three shows we were over there, we had rented gear and the bus and the trailer and everything like that. And our damn driver was double booked on the last three shows. So he had to drop us off and take all the gear back. So all we had was our guitars and, you know, stuff like that. But Blackstone let us use their gear for the rest of the three shows.
That's rad.
Yeah, it was super badass. Yeah, it was super badass. And
you guys just ran to the shows, or
we had to Uber with our guitars, and it was really tight, you know, because, you know, we kept trying to get a van. We kept trying to get a van. They said, "Oh, another hour." The coolest thing was we were in Bordeaux, France. And we had a day off.
That's awesome.
We had a day off, and we had to go to Paris the next day. It was the last show of the tour. And we rode one of those bullet trains the whole way from Bordeaux to Paris. And it was the most – I have a whole recording of it on my phone. You sit there and watch. I time-lapse the whole thing going across, like, those fields and stuff.
Dude, it's gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there, and I was just watching out the window. And I think it took them somewhat of, like, 4 or 5 hours to get there. It took us, like, 48 minutes on that train to get there. We were hauling ass. I mean, it was so cool. It was like that bullet train movie, you know, but not as fast as Kyoto train, but it was fast.
Yeah, and it's like you can, like, get up and walk around and go to the food car and, like, get a glass of wine or a coffee or whatever and eat, and it's super fast and cheap and great.
I actually lost my debit card the last week we were over there, so somebody's running around with my name over there.
Oh, no.
Another glass of cheese for me, please. My name is TJ.
I keep seeing these cheese receipts come out every month. I'm like, damn.
They really
lay off the Gouda.
Yeah.
When you're over there, was there any venues that you played that were just wild? Or
we played the very last one we played. They were all wonderful. We played in Austria. That was badass because it was like elevators. You had to go up like 3 or 4 floors. We played in Vienna, and we went up like three. And Volbeat was playing like the night after us. So we played like 3 floors up. And on top, it was like a big lunch room, and the elevators were here, and the dressing rooms were here. You had to go all the way down to the bottom loading dock to get into the stage, and you walked up top. We actually had a photo shoot up there. You walked out of the lunch room, and you could see all of Vienna. And it was amazing. And, like, these buildings are old. I mean, they're old as hell. And it got what are the roofs made of over there? What are they, like, the, you know, those tile-looking, like, clay-looking shells on the roof, you know?
Yeah.
And it looked like those things hadn't been changed in, like, 100 years. We were just sitting up there looking around. We were like, damn, we're really here, you know? This is really neat. And then the last theater we played was really cool.
Is that in Paris?
It was in Paris, yeah.
I wonder if that's the same place that we played.
Maybe. Gustav Eiffel's place?
I don't remember.
It was really cool. You'll like this. the very first pulley system had something to do with that, right? And all of the material that he built that venue out of was around the same time the construction of the Eiffel Tower was being made. So all of like the stuff and the stage and the decoration around the walls of the stage is parts of the Eiffel Tower. And there's a stage in there. It was a ballroom. He made it for his daughter. You know, he built it for his daughter back in the day. And it's really cool because it's a ballroom when the stage comes down. And they got this pulley system. When they turn it on, it picks up and turns into an actual stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's not where we played.
It's the original pulley, too. They said all they've ever had to do was put oil on it. That's it, and it still works.
Crazy.
The history there is just incredible.
Yeah, it's like our country, the United States, is just a little baby compared to other countries.
Some of those streets you're riding on, they were no wider than this room, and we were in that
huge bus,
with a damn trailer.
Bro, and couldn't pay me to drive a bus over there.
Our driver, we were like, hey, man, we think it's a sidewalk. No. fly up steps. Oh, he was cool, man. We need to see that guy again. He was really cool. His name was Olinka, but they called him Cowboy Greg.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. He's awesome.
It's so nuts.
Dude, traveling in Europe is... Some of the guys in the band are like, eh.
Yeah.
And I ate it up last time.
Yeah.
We were over there for about a month, and all I would do is I'd go for a long run during the day and just see everything as fast as I could, come back, sound check, shower, play the show, eat great. All the catering was incredible. And just I just did that every single day. And I just loved it.
I wanted to ask you about when you were, was it Ireland, I think, when they had that band playing in there in the pub?
Oh, yeah, in Scotland.
How was that? Scotland.
It was amazing. I think I was telling this story recently. But Corey and I, you know, it's like we've been gone for about a month. And this was like the very end of the tour, towards the end. And we're tired, and it's like a Sunday. And I said to Corey, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing today, man. I'm just tired. He's like, well, why don't we just, you and I, let's just go get food. I'm like, all right, cool. And then, so we went to this nice restaurant, little bro date. And I'm like, well, let's just have one nightcap, you know? And then we ended up going out, and we heard a band playing bluegrass music. And we're like, hey, we're American. This is great. Like, we know all these tunes. And they're like, whoa, cool. And they're like, come to our show tomorrow. And they're like, okay. And then they quit playing. We're like, we want to hear more music. And they're like, go to Ben Nevins in Scotland or in Glasgow, like around the corner. We went, and that's where all that music was at. And it was just insane. Like bagpipes and 30 fiddles.
And it wasn't a big room either, was it? I mean, it was a pretty small area.
It was a tiny little bar with a fireplace and the biggest dog I've ever seen in a whole wall of scotch. Just like a huge wall, and you're like, I want that one, and it's like relatively inexpensive.
I'm like, that's
this
incredible.
Is great. I love it here.
Yeah, I don't want to leave.
Guinness, please.
Yeah,
so crazy.
I've always heard the Guinness is so much different there in Ireland.
I wouldn't say it's that different. I would say it's
people drink a lot of it, so it's fresh.
Yeah,
yeah, or it's not. There's less preservatives because it doesn't have to go over the seas.
Yeah.
Also, you're like kind of in that Guinness mood.
I got you. Know? Yeah. That's my favorite. That's my favorite beer.
Me too, man. Guinness. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I had one the other day.
Oh, they're so good. Yeah. And they're the only beer, like a lot of people think that they'll, you know, a lot. I mean, it just depends really, but I've never got a hangover.
Also, people, you know why? People think that it's very high in calories. It's not.
Yeah, no.
And people think it's heavy with alcohol, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's like a Guinness is like similar to like a Miller Lite as far as calorie goes, and it has less alcohol.
Yeah, and it just tastes so good.
It's like 4.something%. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have the stats on me, but I mean, it doesn't have, you know, it's not one of these things. But, I love how you're drinking a Surfside vodka iced tea drink, which is extremely delicious, and also a regular iced tea.
We're just sending it with the caffeine today.
Yeah. I've had a couple coffees already, so
they're good for you.
Yeah, feels good. Let's talk.
We Surfside is the primary sponsor of our events, so you'll see them again tonight. You can
awesome.
Travel in there too.
Yeah,
if you're
sure.
into such things.
Yeah.
So we'll have them there, and then also on the podcast. And I mean, I guess this is as good a time as any. We are doing a section of the podcast where we call it Surfside B-Sides.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your favorite B-side from a record? Like a song that never was on the radio or never was a hit?
Turn to Gold by Audioslave.
Really?
Yeah, it's off the Civilian Project.
What makes you love that one?
it was a hit. I mean, it was a hit. I was, oh, your vision's turned to gold. And it's a monster, dude. And it's so Rage, mm-hmm. but it's so Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Love that.
It's just, me too. It's just, like, when they were doing that Civilian project, it had, like, you know, Show Me How to Live and everything on it. So that was, like, before, you know, the release.
Yeah.
And you, Bristol actually showed me that. And I was like, where'd you find this? He's like, oh, you know, I got my sources. No, he showed me that song. And I was like, damn, that is one of the most rocking, badass songs. That's a hit that never was a hit. Yeah. I mean, it's have you guys heard it?
I think I've heard it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, same. If it's on that record, I've heard it.
Maybe we'll make you guys play it.
Yeah. It's a monster, dude. It is an absolute monster. And those vocals, and there's no editing. There's no anything on that. It's just them in a room playing, and you can hear it breaking. His voice is breaking. Those guitars are busting. It's just like, oh, my God. I'd give anything to be in this damn room.
Yeah.
Sitting in the corner, biting my fingernails.
Man, I think about that all the time. It's like just to be a fly in the room on some of those.
Yeah.
When your favorite albums were made.
And it's so sad, man, to think about, like, you know, none of that will be around again. You know, like that era is gone and that spark of that band is gone because he's gone and they just, it's no more, you know, and it's so damn sad, really.
That's what makes it beautiful, though.
Yeah, it is. So bittersweet, you know. Okay.
Yeah, and because it can't be happening again, it makes it timeless.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Which is weird to think about because of, like, if we had time travel right now, think of, like, all the craziest moments in the history of the world would be, like, tourist destinations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whenever, like, the fall of the Berlin Wall, maybe people would be like, I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah.
You know, or
get crushed by a stone.
Yeah. Like a stone.
Yeah. You know, I seen where that song crossed like 1.5 billion streams the other day. Like a stone.
Checks out.
That's a smash.
Yeah, yeah, dude.
That's bona fide.
Yeah, bona fide platinum. Yeah. No, it's so cool too. You're seeing a revival in the post grunge genre as well as grunge music.
Yeah.
It's starting to kind of bubble back up.
Yeah.
We were at a festival this weekend. And there was a bunch of 20-something, early 20s right next to us. And the music they were playing, I was like, oh, yeah, this is great.
This is it. I was at,
what was it?
Well, just all kinds of stuff. Like, you'd hear Audioslave, and I'd hear, like, Limp Bizkit. Wow. And I'm starting to hear, like, stuff that was from the early to mid-2000s in rock start to bubble back up. And this was at a country festival.
That's great.
But
dude,
it's super cool. That stuff's really crossing over. There's a lot of cool bands that are kind of, you hear and you kind of hear the influence of them.
Yeah. That's kind of like, I like the Nickelback Hardy thing they did not too long ago.
We were there.
Yeah.
I thought that was badass.
Marathon,
dude.
It was fun.
I thought that was at Marathon?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. We played there with Ace Frehley years back, right before COVID. That place is huge.
Yeah, it's big.
You don't realize how big that place is. Mm-hmm. Is that the place, like, right next door? It's got the American Pickers spot. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that place is sick. Yeah. Yep.
And it was super fun. But also, I mean, just bands like Fox and Veed, which is a band that we've had come up.
We've played with them.
They got some Audioslave in there for sure. Mm-hmm. You hear a little bit of it in some of their songs. And dude, even like there's a band from Atlanta, Silly Goose, that's like kind of Limp Bizkit-y.
Really?
Yeah. It's like rap rock.
I don't know if
vibes.
I've heard them. That's awesome. Cool. I have to check that out.
Rock's starting to bubble again.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is great.
I hope it continues.
Agreed.
I really hope it continues, man.
We need a Door to Thunderbolt song to get to 1.5 billion streams.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
That would be on this record.
Yeah. I'd be trying to invest that immediately if that happened. Yeah. I'd be divulging in some stock of music catalogs.
Like, yeah.
Highest bidder, Michael Jackson, right here.
Hell yeah.
Man, it's one of those things where it's all ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
And rock was so big for so long that it eventually had to go down. And now it's like hip hop's really big.
Yeah.
Now country's getting really big.
Yeah.
It's crossing genres.
And they're like, they're crossing. And it's just like they're coming together and making all these newer country songs and stuff, man. They're, you know, B standard, some of them. Some of them are down there, you know. Like, we played with Luke Bryan one time. This was years back. And his guitar player was playing like EVH 5150s. And I was like, damn, this dude's rocking.
Dude, it's like Al Dean's guys. They all play like Mesa Boogie or like those EVH amps, yeah, and they're just like, you know, it's just rock. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love it because, you know, growing up, big rock fan, and then I got so deep into country the last, you know, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So it's super cool to see both of those having.
It's kind of coming together. Moments.
It is.
It is kind of coming together, and I think that's really, really good for music.
Yeah.
Really good for music.
Any other songs on the record that you're extremely proud of or do you think that fans will love?
I think the coolest one, and one of the coolest ones, they're all pretty cool songs. I'm really proud of the songs on the record, but the one that I really love and it kind of sticks with me is our last single that released. It's called Crawling My Way Back to You. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we had recorded that when you were in the studio yet. I think it was one of the last ones because we were done recording the album and that one come out of nowhere. And I was writing it, and it was one of those where you kind of, you're sitting there and you're trying to rack your brain so much, you're just burnt, you want to go to sleep, you want to do anything else but music, but you had to fight to try to find that one more, like, is it going to come out of thin air, what am I going to have to do, am I going to have to go, you know, do something crazy? No, I was just sitting there, just got home from my nephew's soccer game, and I was playing around with these chords on the guitar, and I put the capo on, like, second fret, and, started strumming those chords, and the third chord is what really struck me because it's like a typical country based song, but with a capo on it, sounds really cool. You move that, you move it up to a B, and you play it. But it's just, it come out of nowhere, and the whole song was, I had written that whole song in one voice memo, in a minute and 39 seconds, and it was done. And that's showed it to the guys when we got in the studio, and that's how it went down on the record.
Crazy.
And it's, we all love that song, and I'm really proud of it. Mm-hmm. It's really neat. It's very different for Thunderbolts too. Mm-hmm. Very different.
That's one of the things about a band is like everybody has to kind of love it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, definitely.
So it's interesting to hear how that works as opposed to, you know, if it's like in the regular country world, oftentimes the band might not hear it till we say, all right, we're gonna start playing this one. You know. So it's super cool.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys, I know you talked about being on tour extensively throughout the rest of the year. Anything close to the Nashville area you have coming up?
I'm not sure. I would have to check. But I'm sure there's something coming this way before too long.
Yeah, me and
long.
Kurt are going to have to get out to Wani.
Yeah, definitely. Or even if it's not too far away.
We'll go to Europe.
Yeah.
We have three shows coming up actually in the Atlanta area in September. I do know that.
Yeah.
One in our hometown.
Hell yeah.
I think it's the 21st. 19th, 20th, and 21st of September. We're doing a 3-day run. It's going to be that place, Bird's Nest Listening. No, it isn't. Nope. I'm sorry. The Guitar Museum in Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm.
That's driving distance for us Nashville folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the right there. I don't remember the name of it, though. Anyway. And then we're doing Smith's Old Bar in Atlanta. And then we're doing...
That sounds fun.
The Grand Theater, Cartersville, in our hometown, and that'll be a smash. That'll be really fun. Yeah. It's going to be a big day, so big weekend. So we always like playing at home. We never get to play much at home anymore. We just did a Rome show by the river the other day, and there was 3,500 people there.
I mean, holy cow.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was terribly hot. There was heat warnings everywhere, and like the third song, I was like, you know. You couldn't drink enough water, but right there on the water, it was so humid. But it was nice. I mean, there was a lot of people there. Sweating it out, and they, you know, we had a great time. It was fun,
man. It's super fun to be at your show too because you just, the people are into it.
Oh yeah,
when you guys are playing, the crowd is going absolutely nuts.
Yeah,
if you guys haven't made it to a Georgia Thunderbolt show, it's worth 10 times the price of admission, man. It really is.
It's fun. It's definitely fun. We like engaging. We like seeing people go wild, but just try to be safe, you know.
Yeah,
true. Well, brother, it's been awesome having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much,
man. I
think
it's time we get the guitars out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm excited here in the new content space.
Yeah.
You'll be our first person performing with us back here.
There we go. Breaking it in.
Yeah. Thanks for doing that with us, man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys.
Everyone follow the Georgia Thunderbolts.
Yes.
Go check their music out and be their internet friends and find TJ also on the internet.
Yeah.
Be his internet friend.
Thanks for being here with us, man.
Thank you,
we
guys.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it
so much.
Absolutely. I'm Nikki T.
I'm Kurt Ozon,
and we'll
see you
in
the
front
row
of a Georgia Thunderbolt show.